Hi, welcome to Someone Else's Movie, the podcast where an actor, writer, director, or nebulous industry figure gives a little love to a movie they didn't make. I'm Norm Wilner, senior film writer for Now Magazine, and welcome to the show. My guest this week is Ferdia Walsh-Pilo, an actor and musician who makes his big screen debut as an 80s kid who starts a band to impress a girl in John Carney's Sing Street, which opened in the U.S. last week and arrives in Toronto this Friday, April 22nd, from Elevation Pictures. It's a sweet little movie, and the songs are awfully catchy. Ferdia picked The Revenant, Alejandro G. Iñárritu's wilderness survival drama starring Leonardo DiCaprio as a 19th century fur trapper seeking revenge on the man who left him for dead and murdered his son after a brutal bear attack. The movie won 3 Academy Awards for Best Actor, Best Cinematography, and Best Director because Emmanuel Lubezki is a genius and because Alejandro G. Iñárritu and Leonardo DiCaprio are twin cyclones of desire who will not be denied. But it was really interesting to sit down with Ferdia and talk it through from an actor's perspective. It's a shorter episode than usual this week, but after last week's epic run through Trainspotting with the Blaine brothers, I figure it all balances out. And given that we recorded this in the Lightbox green room between Ferdia's soundcheck and the Toronto premiere of Sing Street at the TIFF Kids Festival earlier this winter, I'm glad we got as much time as we did. And I think we did okay. This is someone else's movie.
Well, The Revenant. Okay, well, first of all, The Revenant is one of those. There's loads of films being released at the moment that are really similar to The Revenant, that are kind of really intense, you know, characters going through in an insane situation film. And then The Revenant really stood out for me because, first of all, it was just a really beautiful movie to watch because it was really beautifully shot and really beautifully done. But secondly, because it was just my favorite one out of all the. Because I usually go in, I'm pretty hard on those movies, because when I go in and see them, I'm like, oh, it's another one of these films. But when I saw The Revenant from like the first scene, I was just like in the zone and I loved it. But
was it your first? I mean, I'm assuming you'd seen Iñárritu's other films before, but was it the first time you'd experienced it? Or was it? I don't even know. Was it in the theater that you saw it? Because it might have been a screening copy at this point.
I saw it in the cinema. It was also a great cinema, so it's a really good room. We're in one of the new Cineplex ones, but it was great.
So you had the full immersion, the whole.
We had the full thing, and we were really. It was a really steep seating thing, so it really felt we were there. But it was great. And I mean, like, I've only been in the film biz for about like a year now, so I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert or anything, you know. So it's just a film that I watched and I just really, really enjoyed. Yeah. Got really into. And that's, you know, after doing Sing Street and after actually being on set, I look at films, I don't quite get into them as much.
Really?
You don't get into, because I used to just get into shit films all the time because you just kind of, but once you've been through the process,
you've seen behind
the camera, it's just kind of, you see the camera rather than you actually watching the movie and what's happening. And that's one of the reasons that I got really into The Revenant, and it takes kind of a good film to get me into it.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because The Revenant is a film that really does make a point, like a selling point of its production.
Oh, absolutely,
about showing,
and that's
you
the
how.
Thing, and that's why people are really hard on it as well, is because, and I'm kind of, sometimes I'm like, oh, what's one of your favorite movies you've seen lately? And I'm like, The Revenant, and I'm kind of feel a bit weird saying that, because usually when there's a film that just has such a big budget and is with so many movie stars in it, I'm kind of like, well, it's just interesting because it makes a big point exactly of selling and getting people into the cinema because of the big names. But they're all brilliant actors and did an amazing job in the film. So, I mean, they did it. It's kind of hard to kind of judge it like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly scored cheap points on the whole Leonardo DiCaprio making faces argument, which is
you can
reduce that performance to just gurning.
Extreme
suffering, but there's so much else going on. That
there is, yeah, and that's why, because there's so little dialogue in the film, and you really, it's really kind of his expressions that gets you into it. And even just little things, like, I mean, I suppose it depends on how you know some people see it, and it's completely comes down to opinion as well, and who, you know, whether he does it for you or not. But for me anyway, he was doing very little, and some people I think just saw kind of him just very deadpan and doing nothing, but I kind of saw a lot more in his eyes and in his kind of, you know, and that was something that was really special. And there's loads of things that happened in the film as well that were kind of like helped him with it. Was just he did an incredible job, and he's really kind of method acting in it, which, yeah, and he went very far with it. I heard I read up about it, and I heard that he just went mad while like eating real.
Oh, the bison liver story.
Yes, yeah. That was crazy.
Yeah. I assume it was artisanal bison liver. You know, it was produced for him specifically.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
not
yeah.
like he went out and murdered
and,
a bison.
And murdered it, yeah, yeah, true.
Slaughtered
yeah,
a bison.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's weird because you're
quite that.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're always in this position as an audience member, let alone as an actor. I'm always aware of what's happening on screen and what mm-hmm. went into that creation. You know, it's that old
yeah
the old story. Dustin Hoffman showed up on the set of Marathon Man. He'd been up for 2 straight days. His character had to stay up for 48 hours. He'd been up by that scene. He'd been up for 2 straight days.
Yeah,
and so he showed up having not slept. And he looked like crap and was barely standing.
Yeah.
And Olivier famously said, you know, darling, if you just try acting, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
No one needs to know.
Like, to know.
The world won't know,
it's
right?
True. Like, I don't know. And it's an interesting one because you don't know really if it makes that much of a difference.
Yeah.
You know, does it really? It's an interesting one, actually. But
because, you know, Tom Hardy, I'm pretty sure, just didn't shave. Like, that was his
entire
work involved.
Yeah.
Not
I mean,
today.
It was also that thing in The Revenant of the this director, remind me of his name.
Oh,
his name
Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Yes, okay. He's great because he does these... No, it's not actually him. It's the DOP, whose name is also another confusing name.
Oh, Emmanuel Lubezki, or Chivo. They call him Chivo.
Yeah, and he does these really long shots where the scene is just all one take, and it's really long. And you see him in Birdman as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that just would put a lot of pressure on you as an actor, because when I'm doing it, when I did doing scenes, it's like, this is going to be cut up and they're going to make me look good in it. But in when you're doing this, and it's like, you're kind of, you're all, you know, you're being really exposed in that one shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it always kind of blows my mind. I'm like, you're doing like an incredible job. I wouldn't be able to handle that pressure, kind of being like, this is going to be one shot now, and you're just going to have to, you know, get it spot on. And it's just, I was always just amazed by these there's just really long shots. Even in the war scenes.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
No, entire scenes
just,
are a single
entire
take.
Entire scenes are just, it's incredible. And we had a little bit of that in Sing Street, but very, very, you know, not nowhere near the kind
yeah.
of example.
It's more, in your film, it's really more like performance stuff.
Yeah.
You have to hit.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the same for The Revenant. I was more amazed that people would hit their marks in these elaborate shots, which have, you know, there's some CG work in the background, sunsets or something, and that waterfall sequence.
Yes.
But you still have to stop just so and do this and turn
here and move
that. Yeah, there's a trick shot in Sing Street, a 360-degree shot, where...
Yeah.
I mean, it's clear they didn't just redress you. There's work involved there.
Yeah. The one where the
circle around.
Yeah, and it's going around the room. And that was what I was kind of referencing to there as well. And there are a few of them that people don't even notice. That's the other thing. People don't know. Even the editors who were actually editing the film at the time, not Julian, but the other editors who were doing ADR, were doing that scene, and I told them that, like, way later on. They didn't even realize that was one take.
Wow.
Even though they could see it, they just never processed, and they were amazed by that. They were like, that's one take. The other one was, there's actually a stunt double of Lucy jumping into the sea in a beautiful sea, and it's all just done in one shot, but it kind of goes around my head, and the stunt double is standing behind my head, kind of thing, you know, but because she's far away and Lucy just swaps with her, basically.
So it's not digital, it's simply practical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah,
and there's lots of those little tricks which are really fun, and you start to notice them in films then as well.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought I was really kind of in awe at The Revenant when they did those, because I was really impressed. And that was one of the things I saw about Birdman, which I didn't actually like as much. It always amazes me.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan, I have to admit, of Iñárritu's stuff, because it feels to me like he really enjoys the suffering of characters rather than people.
And that's why I sometimes feel that I picked The Revenant, I was kind of like, well, should I pick it? Because it's one of those things where they just—it's just the character suffering, and there's lots of that going on at the moment. It's always about characters suffering. That's why Sing Street is a bit of a why I'm proud of Sing Street, because it's like
they're not doing that anymore. They're not doing that kind of heartfelt, you know, it's a bit of breath, it's a breath of fresh air really for me, especially because it's just like, but I mean, I just love films that I can get really, really into.
Yeah.
And The Revenant was one of those for me, you know. I just, and even the things that were weird that I found, but I really liked. Now, I talked to some people about them, they thought it was really weird, but stuff like lots of the snow was landing on the camera a lot, mm-hmm. and there was lots of breath.
Fogging up the lens.
And I thought that was brilliant when I was watching. I thought that, like, but it does make you a bit aware of the camera.
Yeah.
That kind of intrigued me, though, and I've never seen that before in anything.
I can't think of a fiction film that uses it as quite as aggressively. There are moments in some, you know, the rain splashes on in car chase movies where the water just sort of flies up off the street and the camera catches it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in The Revenant, when it happens, and Iñárritu is so meticulous in his creation of stuff that it has to be a deliberate choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it's such a slow, a lot of the scenes are really slow. Like, there's one scene where he crawls over to his son's body, mm-hmm. and the camera goes really close up, and he's breathing on the camera, and it's like, it's so such a slow scene that, and it just stays for ages on him, and it's kind of his breath. You can hear his breath like fogging up the camera.
Yeah.
But I thought it made it a lot more real for me, anyway.
Yeah, it's a weird proposition, right? I mean, to acknowledge the artifice of the filmmaking equipment while you're telling a story set in the 18-whenevers where this couldn't possibly have... There are no cameras, there are no techs.
Yeah.
And from my experience of it was that it actually pulled me out of the film
people
itself.
People said that to me, and it didn't do that to me. It didn't do that to me, which was weird. And when people said it to me, I was kind of like... I did pick it up, and it does make you think for a set, you know, that you realize that it's fogging up the camera, so the camera's there, but it's sort of, because you're watching on a 2D screen, it feels like the screen's being fogged up, you know. So it's kind of it's an interesting one, and I was really intrigued by why he chose to do that. But again, I've never seen it in anything before. It's something really original.
Yeah, there are a couple of filmmakers that I thought of while I was watching it that you know, there's a guy named Larry Fessenden who makes American horror films. He works almost on an art house level.
Yeah.
He's made films like Habit and Wendigo and No Telling. There's a box set that's just been released of his stuff from Shout Factory, and it's fantastic. And most recently, I have one called The Last Winter, which is sort of an inverse version of The Thing. It's about people up in the Arctic who figure out that the world is about to end and can't do anything about it. But they also can't understand exactly why. And it's much deeper and weirder and richer than that. And I thought, like, oh, Fessenden could do this in 90 minutes for a fifth of the budget, maybe, or a tenth of the budget, and then he can make five other movies.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be as grandiose, as big. And I think that's part of his sell, Iñárritu. You know, like Birdman being... It doesn't have to be a single unbroken shot or even a digitally faked one.
Yeah.
It just... He needs it to be.
For himself as well. Like,
I think so.
Just because is. But I mean, it is something to be like. I respect that because I'm like that's a kind of an artistic choice. It's really for me. It's really effective because when I see things cut up, like for instance, I was actually just thinking about recently vomiting. When you're actually getting sick, physically getting sick in a scene, they always cut it up because there's something in somebody's mouth and they're spinning it out. But I mean, that's not such a but just for instance, that's how they do it, and that's what kind of makes it less real when I see those scenes, because I've seen a few scenes where people are getting sick in Sing Street. There's like, when you see that, and when I see that now, I'm like, that's cut, and that's somebody spitting something out. It's just not as real at all anymore. Somebody's just going bleh and spitting something out. But
Whereas I've gotten old, I'm old enough to have seen it so many times now that I'm just like, you can cue in when someone's mouth is full.
Yeah.
And it's not an unbroken shot where just an actor's like, oh, there's something. That's coming. In the next 20 seconds, someone's going to spit that out.
Yeah.
You know, someone walks out like with chipmunk cheeks and.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, holding something. Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's why kind of. And that's just an example. There's lots of things that they do in film that are like that. Nice. I suppose it's kind of it's interesting. I suppose it's great for continuity people. They don't have to worry about continuity. They just have to
make it all happen at once.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the benefit too is that if you get that shot, then that's 7 minutes of movie. You're covered.
Yeah,
right?
You've
shot
absolutely.
7 pages.
No, it's interesting, and I'd love to try that out. You know, it's one of the reasons I was kind of thought I'd love to have been involved with some of this stuff, because I think it would have just been quite a challenge as an actor, you know, because for the people watching it might make as much a difference, but for the actors and for the people making it, it's quite the challenge, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd love to try that out, and I really enjoyed it when we did it in Sing Street for that scene when we had to change costume behind the camera and we had all the lads hiding in the room. I just thought that was great.
There are these incredibly ambitious shots, you know, wonders from decades back. There's one in The Bonfire of the Vanities, it's 5 minutes long, it follows Bruce Willis into an elevator, and De Palma's in the shot, he had to shave, it was so complex that he had to shave his beard and mustache so he could be in the shot and not distract from people. He's in the elevator with Willis because there was no way to not cover him. So he walked in with the crew, he's part of it, he walks out again, and it works. But it's one of those, it's amazing, but it's also one of those things where you just think, well, just don't do that.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed, and I have immense respect, even if I don't necessarily like the end product, of people who set up these impossible challenges to themselves. The single takes in Goodfellas or Birdman, which is a phenomenally complex and almost cruel act of stress on your actors.
I know,
And then to see it in The Revenant where, well, I'm not going to shoot the whole thing in one take, but I'm going to shoot entire scenes in one take.
But it's quite real, because nowadays things are being... you're really exposed. It's quite fake in some ways that we can do something. We call it, you know, theater. There's theater and then there's film. It's quite like theater because you're doing that. You're doing it once and then that's it. Well, you're not doing it. You obviously rehearse it loads and you have a few shots, but you're still doing it all at once. And I mean, it kind of feels like you're cheating in a way when you're cutting it up, because you're like, we do it, and when I just felt like we get a totally different scene when you see it all cut up, because it's obviously cut up and it makes you just look a lot better as an actor. And for when they're not holding shots on you, when you're taking in somebody else's answer, and it's kind of like it feels a little bit like you're cheating. And that's why it's kind of, for people who are movie buffs who are watching it and who work in the movie industry, can appreciate that, you know?
Do you have that thing now where you look at your performance and think, oh, I remember that take was particularly good, or why didn't they use the other one?
I do sometimes, and sometimes I see scenes that I know went terribly and they look grand because I know that a few of the takes, the way they cut it, and they cut out a few of my lines that were just didn't come across well.
Right.
Because you know you have those days, and that's why it just was it was really impressive when I came to when I was watching The Revenant and their performances. And it was my favorite. It was actually my favorite performance of it's my favorite Donald Gleeson role.
Yeah, and he's that guy now. He's in everything.
He's in absolutely everything.
Yeah, Gleeson has suddenly just sort of exploded outwards, and he's in everything. And
he is. He's everywhere. Yeah. Who's his agent?
I don't know. I do know, though. This is
something
great. I know that he and Oscar Isaac have different agents because they both got The Force Awakens while they were working on Ex Machina, but neither of them could tell the other, and nobody knew. Like, they got to
no
the,
way.
Yeah,
I
apparently the story goes they got to the set. One of them, the first one to get there. No, I'm blowing this. The story goes like the second one to get on set was just like, oh, hi. They just shot Ex Machina, and neither of them knew they were going to be working in The Force Awakens.
That's
I don't think
so
they have any
funny.
Scenes together. Are they?
Do they?
No,
I don't think they do.
So,
because
Poe and Hux never really talk or meet.
No, they don't. They don't. But there are. I don't know why they would have met, but I mean,
I was
kind of interested how, like, I don't know if I don't think Donald Gleeson, for me anyway, was well cast in Star Wars. I didn't like him in Star Wars. I don't know what you thought.
Too young?
But
too spitty?
Too nice looking. Maybe
well,
it's because I associate him. Too nice sounding as well. And I found it quite kind of funny seeing him in that role, because he's supposed to be this evil guy, but there's something quite comforting about him.
Yeah.
So he was just like, walking around and being this, and he's a great actor and he brought to it what he could, but it's just I just didn't feel like he was right for the role, whereas in this film it was an interesting version of Donald Gleeson, and I think it worked really well.
His youth,
was really really believable.
His youth really works for him because he does feel overmatched, like he shouldn't be in charge, both in this film and in The Force Awakens. With The Force Awakens, I just assume because it's only 30 years after the defeat of the Empire that everybody's young, like they just had to start over with all these kids who were raised in this fascist worldview who don't know any better, which is why Driver and Gleeson are
in these positions of power, even though they're probably just...
They're just kids.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's an interesting one. But I suppose the guy who played that... What's the name of the character who's supposed to be Darth Vader? Everybody calls him Darth Vader, but that's a bit unfair.
Oh, Kylo Ren, yeah. Adam Driver.
Okay, so what's the name of the bad... guy character?
Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Kylo Ren.
Which
oh, yeah.
sounds like a name some jerk would think was cool.
Yeah.
It's not particularly
exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. But I suppose I thought that was it as well. But I was kind of waiting for the point where he was supposed to turn into the nice guy, but he never really did. He was just kind of still that.
Yeah.
That kind of evil guy who's evil. And I thought the bit with the speech was good, and that worked well. The big kind of Nazi speech
yeah.
thing. For the rest of the film, I just really found myself kind of like, this isn't working. It was just maybe it was me, and maybe it is opinion, but I've heard of people say it as well after me. Actually, my mum and I didn't say anything to each other, and when we got home, we both said the same thing. Just first start, that was great, but Donald Gleeson was not cast in that. You know, it was just kind of our impression of him in that film was just a bit. Whereas there weren't any moments I didn't believe what Donald Gleeson was.
In The Revenant.
Saying in The Revenant, yeah. They were just like that's just got really into it, and he was also kind of, he was also that guy who was the nice guy who was in power, and he kind of really afforded to be nice, I guess, in his, you know. But I don't know if he was supposed to be that guy in Star Wars.
It's interesting. Well, I think in Star Wars, most of the sense that I have of the story is that most of the bad guys are stooges. They're convenient that, you know, the hologram is pulling all the strings.
Yeah.
And
the bad guys are actually just kind of the Star Wars nerds.
Yeah, just kind of underqualified. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, I get to drive a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
Of course I'll do this. Sure. What else do I get to do? Kill people? Yeah, I'll do
that.
Yeah. And the rebels are all just, or the resistance are all just sort of like, well, that's bad.
You should
fight that.
Yeah.
It's the war of the fandoms.
Yeah. You know,
like everybody wants to dress up as Darth Vader and everybody.
Absolutely.
Else.
That's what I was thinking. And I actually thought that when he pulls off his mask in that scene and you see that guy. That actor who's great, and I've just discovered him recently through Star Wars. This great role to land. But there was a bit of a laugh in the cinema because I think everybody was kind of like, he literally looks like a guy who would own Star Wars merchandise at home, just have tons of it. And he looks like the kind of guy who, and I think that was well done, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't really think of it like that, though.
Gives him a level of pathos. There's a somebody. What was it? Somebody came up with this great joke on Twitter about how. Oh yeah, one of the Star Wars sequels will have to be about Kylo Ren finding out that C-3PO was actually built by Darth Vader, and so he has to, like, that makes him the ultimate collectible. It's the greatest thing in the world that he has to find in the universe.
That's
I would watch that. I think that would be
I would
fun.
Absolutely watch
just
that.
Just some sort of running gag throughout the entire movie. It's a, you, robot, come here. Come
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Looking for the signature in the case, like the old apples.
That's funny.
Yeah, and then we barely mentioned... Tom Hardy
and the other thing was I just discovered recently that the guy who plays Leonardo DiCaprio's son in the movie Glass's son is Forrest Goodluck, who's actually he's my age as well, and it was his first major film, so I thought that was funny that he was he's in a similar situation to me, and I'm always keeping an eye out on young actors, and I'm like, are they in the same situation? But he kind of landed this big role and is I suppose having a supporting role in The Revenant is kind of a similar, you get the similar exposure as you do having a lead role in a film like Sing Street, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, too, to see any kind of untested performance
in a film like The Revenant.
Yeah, and be given that much, or in The Revenant,
absolutely.
Or even in Sing Street. Like casting someone who hadn't made a movie before is a big challenge.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, risk.
That was interesting, but I think he just had that look, you know? He had that Native American Pawnee kind of look, as well as being a really good looking guy, and obviously he's a great actor, so he did and he did a great job.
Sure. And you have, you know, DiCaprio and Hardy as scene partners, so they're going to elevate whatever you do.
He could have
been terrible. He's not, but
he's
certainly there's some safety there.
No, he was great. And
I mean, you
Tom
get to
Hardy.
Work with you got to work with, you know, Maria Doyle Kennedy and
Jack
Aidan Gillen
and
Jack Rayner,
yeah.
People who I just, you know, have not even enjoyed, but just basically delighted in. They're like, Gillen, my God, he's been in everything.
Yeah.
It's like, I think the first time I noticed him was probably The Wire. But I went back and realized I'd seen him in a bunch of other things. And, oh, he's English. Irish. But, yeah, that's
He's in The Wire, the new film about the what? Sorry,
the TV series, The Wire.
The TV series. He plays
the guy running for mayor of Baltimore.
Yeah, for some reason I was thinking of The Walk. You know, The Walk. That's the release with Joseph Gordon.
Yeah.
It's like, but he is turning up in all that stuff. And I saw recently that he's in The Maze Runner and stuff, and he's in all those big new films.
Yeah.
And
Dark Knight Rises.
The Dark Knight Rises. That was really funny. So that was a similar story to me, but. I mean, I suppose it's on another scale, kind of doing it for. I don't know what that must be like doing, you know, a film for the first time with some, like Leonardo DiCaprio. That must have been crazy.
Especially given that so much of DiCaprio's performance with him is just, again, you know, screaming and bleeding and mourning.
I wonder what it was like lying there in the snow with Leonardo DiCaprio crying and over you.
Take six. Yeah. Let's do it again.
takes. Talent.
Yeah, and it's a great, you know, it's a terrific showcase for him. It's a great debut, but but then he's basically still dumped after the first hour because it's all about these other characters and these, you know, like it's serving the plot rather than like a star turn.
It is. I know, but I mean, he did a great job. And I'd be absolutely delighted if I landed a role like that. But I mean, Will Poulter is someone else I just discovered recently. I'm discovering all these people only lately because I've only been in the business about a year. A year and a half now. But he's great as well. And I haven't actually seen Glassland yet.
Next month, I think.
Oh, does it? Yeah. It only opens here next month. Yeah. So I'm dying to see that one. But I mean, and he was great. He was great in it as well. Tom Hardy, like. What else have I seen Tom Hardy? Obviously he's in The Dark Knight Rises.
Sure.
As well. It's totally different. I recognised Tom Hardy's voice before I recognised his face, to be completely honest with you. But he did a great job in it. Like, he's a natural.
Yeah, his accent work is so weirdly compelling.
I know,
because it's like he picks a speech impediment and then puts an accent on top of it.
Yeah.
And not just in The Revenant. Like, he's done that a bunch of times, and it's just fascinating. I mean, have you seen Locke? Locke is the film that came out 2 years ago. It's Stephen Knight's movie. It's just Hardy in a car.
Yeah.
It starts when he gets in. It ends before he gets out. And it's like 85 minutes of shots of the car with Tom Hardy in it. And it's basically otherwise a radio play. He's driving and he gets phone calls. He's driving from, I want to say...
That's really boring.
Oh, God, it could have been.
But
it's fascinating. And he chose, for no particular reason, as far as I know, he chose to do it in a Welsh accent. And... it's fascinating.
It's really,
because why would you?
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm delighted when I get to audition for stuff in my own accent. I'm like, I really hope I get this, because, you know. But that's really interesting. And he does a great job at accents. I've only really seen clips of other stuff he's done in different accents. But he's great. I was going to say something about him there that I totally forgot.
It'll come back to me.
All right.
But I mean, there's so many things in The Revenant that, and there was also that thing that it was really gory, and there were lots of horrific kind of violent scenes, and there were lots of just blood. But I think the contrasting, when I was watching it, one of the things that I really picked up on was the white snow and the red blood, which was just this kind of beautiful thing, which was like a work of art. It was like this kind of. This disgusting thing happening in this kind of beautiful scenic which is shot up in Canada
it was shot all over the place, as it turns out. The I believe, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the waterfall sequence is, I don't know if DiCaprio is there himself, but the footage was shot in Argentina.
No way.
Yeah, and or at least somewhere in South America, and then there's other stuff that was photographed around somewhere else on the West Coast, but further out in and maybe to the north. But it's one of those incredibly... I'm going to check that now just to make sure I don't get this wrong. Yeah, the waterfall was shot in Tierra del Fuego, Argentina. A lot of it was filmed in and around Calgary, Canmore, Alberta, Canada. I'm going to get this wrong. Kananaskis Country, Alberta. Libby, Montana. Mammoth Studios, Burnaby, British Columbia. Sierra Madre Occidental, Mexico. Sierra Madre del Sur, Mexico. The White Mountains of Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah.
San Francisco Peaks, Arizona. Now, some of that might just, this is IMDb stuff, so some of that might just be photograph plates that they went off and shot backgrounds for. Because, I mean, there are a couple of shots where the digital thing sort of betrays us, and you can tell that the actors aren't in the same space.
Yeah,
the wilderness.
I didn't pick up on that much, but I remember there's one or two shots that were kind of like, okay, maybe that's not. But I thought, I didn't actually know, I didn't check it out, so I was like, is that just me, or is that... But, I mean...
I think for the most part, when we see something, it's real.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels a bit cheaty. But I suppose they're allowed to cheat a bit, because the rest of the film, they were trying so hard not to cheat, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were not cutting it up like that much.
Pursuit of a larger truth.
Yeah.
Say.
But, yeah, no, it just drew me in, that film. Like, I mean, just, it's also a film that I saw really recently, so that's why it's another reason why I chose it, because it's fresh in my mind. And it's like...
well, that vivid kind of experience.
Yeah.
I mean, what other films have sort of grabbed you that way recently? Is there anything, you know, if you wanted to recommend something to someone?
Well, it depends what kind of mood you're in. I mean, films that get you into that kind of zone of... that's the reason. I just prefer fun films, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about... To me, you know, I've watched loads of really good films, and I think at this point now I can tell which is a good film, which isn't a good film, and I know that now, and I'm just kind of like, which I didn't, and I knew that straight after Sing Street, because it's just something you learn by making a film, but I mean, when I was getting into it, and I was just going, I think it was really important that people enjoy just enjoy a film, and I'm also like being like, shit, to my little sister, like, why are you watching that? Like, that's utter crap. Like, why would you be exposing yourself to that? I say it to my parents as well, and they're like, look, she's just... But I think, you know, it's almost more important that you just sit down and you really enjoy a film. And it's like my older brother's always, me and my closest brother, who's also kind of like the Jack Rayner thing in Sing Street,
right,
he's really tough on films, and he's really kind of like, you know, he's a real film buff, but he's really, you know, he's always tasked saying films are crap. Now, he really liked The Revenant as well, so that's something we kind of shared, but it's just interesting, because my oldest brother is always like really open-minded. He's like, I love everything, you know, even all these crap films, but sometimes that's the way to be, you know, just kind of just be positive and just kind of enjoy. It's more about enjoying the film rather than kind of being like, this film is this and this film is that, because
The things you love.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a good enjoy.
And just before we run out of time, the closer on the show is always the same, which is, is there anything that you would personally want to take away from The Revenant? Usually it's how, you know, like, what have you stolen from this film? But obviously you saw this after you made your movie. So is there something in it that you would want to carry forward with you or incorporate into your own toolbox?
Well, I mean, a lot of it was kind of... a lot of it was doing less.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much more effective. And it's something that I learned doing on set on Sing Street, and I didn't quite get until I actually saw the movie. But when I saw it in The Revenant, there was kind of this extreme thing where he was doing very little at some points. Now, a lot of it, as you're right, it was kind of like, I don't know how he did that, because a lot of the time he was just like, there's lots of groaning.
Like, you have to know exactly which muscle group hurts to do the scene.
How do you not forget when I'm limping, pretending to limp in a few plays and stuff, I'm like, which leg is it? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how he does that, but I mean, there's so much. I mean, every time I watch a film, I try to take something away from it. I'm like, I gotta work on that, because I mean, the acting wise the film didn't just kind of impress me with just the acting. It was more just sitting down and watching the beautiful scenery and the kind of, the, as I said, the contrast between the beautiful scenery and the kind of gory, intense scenes. And I mean, there's just great acting. It's always good to just watch films which has great acting in it.
Yeah. So it took you away, and that's really it.
It took me into another zone, another place, and I really got to really dive straight into it much more than other films have. You know, because a lot of the time you watch films and you're like, okay, you're just judging it, you know. Whereas with The Revenant, I just got so into it where I was like, you know, I didn't even think about this shot being like that and this shot until like I rewatched bits of it online, because it's like, this shot was amazing. But then you kind of pick up on those bits. But I just, that's the reason I chose it.
Yeah.
Because I just got straight into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
From the word go.
My thanks to Ferdia Walsh-Pilo, whose new movie Sing Street opens in Toronto this Friday, April 22nd, in Vancouver next Friday, April 29th, and goes wider across Canada on May 5th. If you're listening in the U.S., you can catch it in theaters right now. Thanks also to Kate Parks at Elevation Pictures. She knows what she did. You can find Ferdia on Twitter at Ferdiawp, F-E-R-D-I-A-W-P, all one word. And, as of today, you can find The Revenant on Blu-ray and DVD from 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment. It's also available for purchase on iTunes and Google Play. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Norm Wilner and elsewhere on the internet at NowToronto.com. You can also find this podcast on Twitter at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, and on the web at SomeoneElsesMovie.com. If you want to leave a review on iTunes, that would be appreciated. And this week's phrase is Big Bear Chase Me. Thanks for listening.
All right, fellas. I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.